I knew as soon as I got off the plane in Connecticut, this was the biggest news this week, and every state trying to understand what does it mean for us in our school districts. President Donald Trump's administration slashing half of the U.S. Department of Education staff amid mass layoffs and buyouts, and of course, millions of students, parents, teachers, administrators, support staff are wondering, well, what does it mean for us? And here in Connecticut, we have Kay Diaz, the president of the CEA, the Connecticut Education Association, the largest teachers union in our state, to talk about this. Kate, you sort of had sort of sounded the alarm, if you will, about this really months ago. Talk about, I guess, your reaction when this news broke.
Good morning, Melissa. Well, I have to say, I wasn't necessarily surprised. I think we've known that this administration has intended to kind of erode the Department of Education. But I am concerned because of the role that the Department of Education plays. We have to remember that they are sort of the fiscal distributor of all of the resources to our public schools. So I think that's particularly concerning. And really, they're the oversight to ensure that our students' rights are maintained. So, you know, they have the obligation to make sure that the IDEA, our students with disabilities, get the services they need, and our students that are living in maybe poverty or having other challenges are getting their needs met through the school system. So when we talk about removing that staff, we're talking about removing oversight, and we're talking about removing the facilitation of funds to the local school districts. So my concern is that how are we ensuring, and who do you call, right? The check doesn't come for the grant that the government has promised. Who are you calling if half of the department is now gone? And we also have to remember the third big enormous function is the oversight of $47 million or 47 million people's student loans. So we have great concern that our students who are going to college are going to struggle with getting student loans, you know, completing the FAFSA. We saw 2 years ago the FAFSA was overhauled, and we had enormous challenges getting them completed in a timely fashion and getting everything processed to schools, and that's with the current staffing. You know, you talk about half the staff, and I don't know what that process now looks like.
So I'm looking at your statement that was released this week. It says the cuts will have devastating consequences in classrooms in Connecticut. Programs that reduce class sizes, provide critical special education services, ensure equitable access to quality education, and administer critical student loans and grant funding now in jeopardy. And when I was reading about this, KTS, I was kind of, I have to say, a little bit confused, because I think sometimes people feel like the U.S. Department of Education is in charge of what's being taught in the schools. But regardless of these cuts, that's not being impacted, correct? Like how the schools function and programming, that's still done at the local level, correct?
Absolutely. That's okay. The one thing that I want, you know, everybody to understand is that local control is still strong. We have an obligation at the local level to ensure the policies and curriculum are what our communities want them to be. We're driven by some of the conversations and some of the legislation that's put out there. But what is actually done at the local level is the decision about policies. You know, this is where some of the programming around students, you know, the diversity is not necessarily ceased simply because there's a letter from the State Department. We have local control. We will continue to, you know, run the curriculum that our communities decide. Local boards of education have an enormous amount of authority over what goes on in our school districts, and none of that has been compromised. What we are concerned about is the money that keeps our school districts afloat. You know, you have a situation like Waterbury getting $23 million from the federal government. You know, if a check doesn't get received for the grants because they're not distributed in one lump sum, this is now, okay, how are we paying our teachers? How are we opening our schools? How are we paying our bills? And, you know, you compound that with some of the challenges we face at the state level, and, you know, you really get into a space. We have to remember school districts don't run with extraordinary buffers, right? Like, they don't have a lot of money sitting in reserve just to cover us in case. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're concerned that the reality is that if you mess around with the funding sources, you ultimately impact kids.
Well, and I was reading, Kate Diaz is here, the president of the CEA. I was reading here, this is in USA Today, as I was reading it, it says the preliminary tally of most of the cuts shows the Federal Student Aid Office, which, as you mentioned, talks about student loans, financial aid, and the Office for Civil Rights. Here's the part where I wonder, and we've seen this happen before, especially with DOGE. We've seen where Elon Musk has made a cut before, and then he's backtracked because he said, oh, after looking into this, you know, the details are sort of, you know, the devil in the details kind of. And he said, oh, I've made a mistake. I mean, he has come out and said, I've made mistakes in cutting things. What I worry about here, and I think most people go to, oh, discrimination and protecting students and teachers. I think people a lot of times, I'm not, you know, trying to lump everyone, but they'll think immediately like, oh, not to say that it's not important, but like LGBTQ groups. But when you talk about special education, I don't know anybody that has controversy over making sure, especially like here in Connecticut, we've been sounding the alarm about the importance of special education and needing the funding just at the state level. And that's my concern, is when you look at the tens of thousands of kids who are considered to need special education services, again, not taking away from different groups of students, but special ed alone, that's part of this discrimination. And I'm wondering if you think they'll backtrack on some of these cuts when you look at, we're not just talking about things that the Trump administration has said they are clearly against, but we're talking about here kids who need that support from paraprofessionals, teachers, what have you.
Well, I think the Office of Civil Rights will definitely be something they'll be reconsidering. And there's two reasons why. One is, I think our disability rights advocacy groups will ring that bell very strongly and remind people that the OCR is the investigatory authority if there's violations of students' rights. And so I think that is definitely an advocacy group that will have standing in this and will be very strong, as are the educators who are concerned about how do we follow through? How do we ensure that students are getting what they are supposed to be getting? I think the other component is, you know, we've had a lot of conversation about the considerations of the administration wanting to, quote unquote, end diversity, equity, and inclusion practices. The grand irony of cutting the Office of Civil Rights is that would be also the investigatory authority for looking at districts that they feel are violating what they believe are now appropriate practices. So I think that one's definitely going to end up being revisited. I also think when you talk about the student loan program, you know, there's been discussion about just transferring it to the Department of Treasury, but we have to remember it involves 47 million people, billions of dollars, and it is an intricate system. And so it's not like you can just, you know, hand a checkbook over. That's not how this works. So you're going to have some challenges. And ultimately, that's about the government getting their money back. And so there's a responsibility question, I think, in terms of derailing all of the student loan programs administration, because how are we monitoring and ensuring the government gets paid back for the loans it's putting out? So I think both of those things ultimately will have to be questioned. In the meantime, there's going to be harm done, though. And that's the problem we are going to be facing is, you know, hopefully here in Connecticut, we have some thoughts about how we ensure that our students' rights are protected, and how we continue to monitor and support those students. But ultimately, we also have a fiscal question about if the government starts to mess around with these monies, what does that mean for the children right at the most basic level, which is in the classroom?
Kate Diaz is here, president of the CEA, and we are talking about the impact on those Department of Education cuts at the federal level and the impact here in Connecticut. I wanted to ask you, Kate, and don't make fun of me. This is kind of maybe wishful thinking, but maybe there is some reality to it, so I wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think, when we talk about the impact student loans and aid for college students, could cutting these jobs that are directly correlated, could it force colleges and universities to find better solutions to become more affordable? Because one of the biggest issues we have seen, regardless of whatever administration is running the country, we have seen that it exponentially becomes more and more unaffordable. And it feels like every generation coming out of college now is in more and more debt than the one before. So does this sort of force the system to kind of take a look and go, hey, we've sort of been in a place that we're charging astronomical amounts that are really not affordable for the average person? Or does it even maybe force the student in high school, middle school, and their families to take a step back and go, okay, so we can't afford college, but guess what? There are so many other avenues we could go, and sort of getting out of that mindset of pigeonhole, I have to go to college or bust.
Well, I definitely think that, you know, whenever you have a fiscal impact like this, right, in terms of access, because that's what really the federal student loan program is about, access. I do think there's a twofold response. And I do think on the side of the institutions, you're going to see things like the closing of programs. You know, you're going to see more some of the specialized programs that have lower enrollment. You might see that start to be pulled back faster. I know UConn has already been doing an assessment of, you know, do we have programs that don't have large numbers and therefore the overhead for them is greater? So I think you're going to see some of that go on, which has a downside, right? There are some unique programs that provide special kind of identifiers and special educational experiences, but those will go away. I think you're going to see broader, broad degree programs are the ones that survive. And I definitely think there'll be sort of that moment of, well, we can't afford to go to college, so what are the other options? And, you know, there, again, is opportunity. We might see enrollments in, like, our community colleges go up, right, because they tend to be a more affordable local solution. Students can go to school from home. You might see some of that. Or, quite frankly, what I'm really concerned about is you might see people drop out of the educational experience in entirety, you know, with the anticipation of, well, I guess I'll work for a while. And what we know is statistically, the longer you wait to go start that academic experience at college, the harder it is to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So I think there is concern about that. Like, we don't want to continue to disenfranchise people who are already disenfranchised, right? That, you know, people who are economically challenged by these, by the ability to get to college, you know, we don't want to basically make the barrier so large that they never have the opportunity.
No, and I
so
get
that's
that.
That's one of the concerns.
Yeah, no, I do get that, Kate. But I feel like as, and again, I feel this as a parent of an elementary school student. And, you know, we've been saving for our kid's college before he was even born. And yet
right.
it's interesting because my husband and I invest a lot of time in looking at what are the alternatives, not to stray him away, but like we're just above, if you will, that threshold where we would probably not get a lot of aid unless our kid is like unbelievable in some kind of athletics or academics or something like that to get his own scholarship. I mean, a lot of loans and aid programs, a lot of people in Connecticut are almost like just are not in that I guess that threshold, if you will, to actually get in on some of this
yeah.
money. And so it I do feel like that this generation of parenting is sort of already kind of in that place where it's like, let's look at what options we have for our kids. So with or without these cuts, it's like, I know for us, the mindset has changed since my parents had kids that they put through college. It's completely different now. And so when you hear about this, I mean, I am wondering if especially parents with younger kids are going to feel more inclined to say, okay, but what other options? Because I look at a lot of jobs today that don't actually need a college education in order for you to excel. You could go to a trade school, you can get an associate's, you can get certificates. I mean, there are a lot of different things that kids could do, but we've kind of pigeonholed, I feel like we've made people feel like they have to go to college or a university or bust. They're just not going to make it in this world. And that's just not necessarily true.
Well, and I think that if you're actually getting onto a conversation that I think is really broadly being had in many places about, you know, where are we putting our energy for our students? Are we ensure that we're exposing them to all the opportunities? You know, we've been strong advocates for making sure that as we kind of envision the school of the future, that we do so in a way that says, you know, you as kids need to see the whole world of the opportunity
mm-hmm.
and then make a good decision. Because
yeah.
I agree with you. I think, you know, the pendulum in education often swings back and forth, right? We went from nobody goes to college except the elite, and then we swung the pendulum to everybody goes to college.
Right.
And I think we're trying to settle into a space that says, listen, college is a great opportunity. It is a great space to go if that's what you want to be doing,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, but we're very conscientious. You know, I'm a high school math teacher. I'm super conscientious when I would talk to kids. You know, what is it that you really want to do? Because college is an extraordinary opportunity if it's the one you want.
Right.
But it's an extraordinary burden if it's not.
Exactly.
So, you know, getting into spaces where we are exposing children and families to the world of opportunity so that they're making decisions that really make sense for their child, right? And I think that's what we are, hopefully, I think long before this administration came along, I think that's been on the table as a conversation. How are we building that out?
I agree.
Will this, you know, facilitate that? Will this push that conversation more aggressively in some places? I would imagine it will.
But you don't want to close the pool of kids who do want to go to college now, making that even smaller because of this. No, I totally hear you, Kate Diaz. And I so appreciate you and the CEA and always having these conversations, whether it's at the local level or bringing national news to the Connecticut news sector. I always appreciate your conversations here on the air. And I thank you so much again today for doing that. And I'm sure we're going to talk again very soon. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, Melissa.